From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I've chosen three pieces of literature that I think are very relevant to prevention. In one of them, we'll talk about the association of gestational diabetes and long-term cardiovascular risk. We'll talk a little bit about whether baseline diastolic blood pressure should affect our thinking in terms of lowering systolic blood pressure. And then I'll go through a few points from a very nice review that came out this week in JACC on how low should we go with blood sugar, blood cholesterol, and blood pressure. And these are very relevant, I think, because in the next month to 6 weeks, we're going to see the initiation of a new set of guidelines for hypertension treatment, and this will be a nice preamble to that. So let's start. The first article was published this week by Tobias and colleagues in JAMA Internal Medicine. The title is Association of the History of Gestational Diabetes with Long-Term Cardiovascular Disease Risk in a Large Prospective Cohort of U.S. Women. I think you're all aware of the Nurses' Health Study, which was initiated, at least the second part of it, Nurses' Health Study 2, was initiated in 1989, and it enrolled 116,000 female U.S. nurses aged 24 to 44 who have had ongoing follow-up. These individuals receive biennial questionnaires and they track behavioral characteristics, health outcomes, and lifestyle factors. This particular analysis looked at nearly 90,000 women who had reported at least one pregnancy and had been free of cardiovascular disease and cancer at baseline enrollment. And the follow-up was through May 31st of 2015. Remarkably, there was 90% follow-up of eligible participants. The gestational diabetes was self-reported at baseline in 1989, and then it was updated every 2 years. Overall, there were about 1,100 incidents of either non-fatal or fatal MI or stroke confirmed by medical records. And the authors used multivariable Cox modeling to try to estimate the effect of gestational diabetes on longer-term risk. The nurses in the study had a mean age of about 35 years, and after adjusting for age, pre-pregnancy body mass index, and other covariates, gestational diabetes was associated with subsequent cardiovascular disease with a hazard ratio of 1.43. Interestingly, after adjustment for weight gain after pregnancy and lifestyle factors, the association was attenuated substantially and was barely significant. So this was an important observation. Also, classifying gestational diabetes by progression to type 2 diabetes in these patients illustrated a hazard ratio of about 4. So the authors concluded that gestational diabetes was associated with a modest increase with cardiovascular disease later in life. Again, the hazard ratio about 1.43. The absolute risk remained low, and of course it was a younger age cohort. What was interesting and I think somewhat reassuring was that if a woman had gestational diabetes, but then their health risk factor profile changed or improved, this ameliorated the risk seen later on and suggesting that lifestyle changes like a heart healthy diet, physical activity and maintenance of an optimal BMI and avoidance of tobacco would reduce a woman's risk even if she manifests gestational diabetes at the time of a pregnancy. So I thought it was an interesting article, and certainly the Nurses' Health Study has brought us so much information on women's health. The second article I'm going to talk about today is by Bedu et al. It was in circulation this past week. The title of the article is The Influence of Baseline Diastolic Blood Pressure on Effects of Intensive Compared to Standard Blood Pressure Control. And this is an investigation looking at the SPRINT trial. Remember, the Systolic Blood Pressure Intervention Trial. This was a randomized controlled trial. You'll recall that randomized patients to either an intensive target, systolic less than 120 millimeters of mercury, versus a standard target, less than 140 millimeters of mercury, in over 9,000 older adults with high blood pressure and or increased cardiovascular risk profile. And the outcome was a composite of cardiovascular deaths. This was a post hoc analysis, which looked at a very interesting question, and that is, did the patient's baseline diastolic blood pressure have any effect on the benefit of intensive lowering of systolic pressure? And you and I face these patients all the time where they have a systolic pressure that's high and a diastolic pressure that might be on the low side. And our worry is, if I lower the systolic pressure, will I also lower the diastolic pressure and increase their risk of falls or coronary events or other things? So in this study, you may remember, the mean baseline systolic pressure was around 140 and the diastolic was around 78. Irrespective of the randomized treatment, baseline diastolic blood pressure had a U-shaped association with the hazard of risk of cardiovascular outcomes. However, the effects of intensive systolic blood pressure intervention on the primary outcome was not influenced by the baseline diastolic blood pressure. The outcome hazard for intensive versus standard treatment was a hazard ratio of 0.78, or on average, a 22% risk reduction. And this was pretty similar in the group with the lowest quintile of diastolic blood pressure. It was around 61 millimeters versus the upper four quintiles, where the mean diastolic pressure was 82. So the authors concluded that a low baseline diastolic blood pressure was still associated with increased risk of cardiovascular events, and that treating the systolic pressure in this group consistently reduced the cardiovascular risk across all quintiles of diastolic blood pressure. This certainly, I thought, was an interesting analysis, and it certainly will affect the thinking that I have as I look at these patients who have a higher systolic pressure and they're going into therapy with a lowish or low diastolic pressure. The last article I want to talk about during this week's Eagle's Eye View is a very nice review of some of the trials around the notion, how low do we go with treating glucose, cholesterol, and blood pressure in primary prevention? This came out in JACC just recently. First author, Dr. Hong and Dr. Fuster and Rosenson, are second and third authors, respectively. So a few key points about this wonderful review. First, remember, cardiovascular disease accounts for about 33% of deaths in the United States, and the major risk factors are diabetes, hypertension, and dyslipidemia. Prediabetes is a risk factor for both the development of diabetes and cardiovascular disease, but if you ask the question, do the trials support medical therapy in this group of patients to lower risk? The answer is, so far, looking at agents like sulfonylureas and metformin, the benefit of pharmacologic therapy to lower risk in patients with prediabetes is not well-founded. Now, in patients who have newly diagnosed diabetes, what is the evidence that treating that significantly lowers cardiovascular risk? The SAVOR TIMI 53 study looked at the use of saxagliptin and did show a reduction in events at 2 years. There's a trial, you'll remember, the United Kingdom Prospective Diabetes Trial, which looked at diabetes-related complications in an intensive group where the A1C was 7% versus conventional, where it was around 8%. And there was no difference in cardiovascular event rates in that study. But at 10 years, there was a lower rate of MI in the intensive group compared to usual care. This was not too dissimilar from another randomized trial called Diabetes Control and Complications, Epidemiology of Diabetes Interventions and Complications Trial. That's a mouthful, DCC/EDIC. And this looked at 17-year follow-up in type 1 diabetics. And the intensive group that achieved a mean A1C of 7 did have a reduction in cardiovascular events compared to control, where the mean A1C was 9%. Trials which included participants who've had diabetes for a longer period of time included studies like ADVANCE, ACCORD, and the VADT trial. The ADVANCE study looked at randomized patients, and there was a lower rate of microvascular events with intensive diabetes control, but not cardiovascular events. Similarly, the VADT trial secondary analysis suggested perhaps some benefit of intensive control, but only for those who had diabetes of less than 12 years duration or patients who had lower calcium scores, and there was no effect on all-cause mortality. You may also remember that the ACCORD trial observed actually an increase in mortality among patients randomized to intensive control. However, there was a significant reduction in non-fatal MIs in 3 years compared to the control group. So the story, I think, on the diabetics from these trials is that the pre-diabetics, we don't have good data on intensive control lowering risk, and the data for patients with established diabetes is more mixed, but recent diagnosis of diabetes perhaps more benefit, or the long-term follow-up of the type 1s, there may be benefit. If we look at the question about how low to go with cholesterol, remember the 2013 AHA-ACC guidelines really departed from the notion of having a target for the LDL at treatment. However, among low-risk groups, several studies have suggested that statin therapy reduces risk. Remember Jupiter, that trial included men 55 or older and women 65 or older who had cholesterols under 130 and a CRP of 2 or higher, and these people got benefit. HOPE 3 also showed a reduction in cardiovascular events among patients randomized to statin therapy, and this was, again, men 55 or older and women 65 or older who had additional risk factors. And so the current guidelines are certainly suggesting that in some of these patients, perhaps lower is better. Right now, the current guidelines recommend the decreased statin therapy if the LDL goes to less than 40. But the recent PCSK9 trials do not observe safety issues with LDLs down to even as low as 25. Current guidelines for hypertension, as you know, recommend pharmacotherapy for blood pressures of 140 over 90 or higher. This was an increase in the target for patients who previously had more aggressive targets with diabetes, cerebrovascular disease, and chronic kidney disease, and CAD, where the prior levels were 130 over 80. Particularly, the most recent set of hypertension guidelines had moved up the goal for patients over the age of 60 to 150 over 90 as the new treatment initiation standard. I think it's fair to say that the new hypertension guidelines, which will be released in the next couple of months, I believe are going to take more of a Bayesian approach, estimating 10-year risk and then adjusting targets depending on that risk. What about treating patients who have high normal blood pressures? There's a couple of trials that have looked at this, FARO and TROPHY. These looked at randomizing patients who had a systolic pressure over 130. In HOPE-3, there was no significant improvement in patients who got a combination of candesartan and hydrochlorothiazide. But you may recall that for the patients in that study who had a systolic pressure greater than 143, there was benefit to being put on antihypertensive therapy. Obviously, we continue to deal with this notion I mentioned before. How low do we go? What about the diastolic blood pressure? And we certainly need more information going forward. So I've tried to cover, I think, some interesting notions in the area of prevention today, gestational diabetes, how low to go with cholesterol therapy, where are we at with the management of hypertension. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View this week. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. All of this information can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. And I'll look forward to talking to you again next week. And as mentioned, we'll have a lot more on the new hypertension guidelines after their release in the next month or two. Thank you.